Hey listeners, quick question. Are you tired of overpaying for your mobile plan? I've got the answer. Ting Mobile. Ting Mobile is all about flexibility and savings. You only pay for what you use, no crazy fees or overages. It's perfect for those who want control over their phone bill without sacrificing quality. Say goodbye to bloated phone bills. Go to foxcitiesmm.com/ting. Ting Mobile. Mobile that makes sense.
You're listening to Fox City's Murder and Mayhem, your bi-weekly dose of true crime history in a small rural community of Wisconsin.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Fox City's Murder and Mayhem. I'm Eric.
I'm Gavin.
And we're back again, Gavin. Where are we traveling to today?
We are in basically Green Bay. Okay. A couple cities mentioned, but basically Green Bay.
Cool.
Yes.
We enjoy Green Bay.
Do you?
Some good stories come out of Green Bay, you know? You got police officers shooting each other.
Well, there might be a bunch of stuff coming out of Green Bay because, you know, the way this podcast tends to work is one story has me finding another story and finding another story. And now, a while back, I was like, oh, we might have to wrap up this podcast. And now I'm like, I can probably got stories for a year. So this podcast is not going anywhere. But definitely a handful of Green Bay stories. This is one of them.
All right. Well, take her away.
So I'm calling this the Minahan Scandal. Don't know. You know, it's a fine title. It'll work.
Probably pronouncing the last name wrong. I assume Minahan is the last name.
Minahan is the last name. I don't know if I'm pronouncing. If somebody wants to correct me, you know, go for it. I don't know how else I would pronounce it, so I'm going to say Minahan.
Cool.
I'm not even going to say that I'm saying it wrong, because that's how I think it is said. So, I guess start out with kind of explaining where this episode came from. There's a book that came out last year, 2023, a book that came out called The Maid and the Socialite. And the book is written by Linda Drews, who lives in Green Bay and does some writing seminars in Door County. And I this book sounded really interesting, and I wanted to kind of write like a super condensed version for this episode. Well, it turns out other people have the same idea, not necessarily the podcast part, but the reading the book part, because I put it on hold at my local library. And I was 12th in line. and it's been out a year, and I'm still 12th in line. And then, so I was like, okay. So I used articles and interviews that she had done, and that didn't get me very far either, because it turns out that she's really smart. Not just a good writer, but really smart. In marketing, in that she didn't give the story away in her interviews and articles. She just sort of gave you like a sample, like, here's what we're going to talk about, but I won't tell you.
Clever.
Yes. It was done really well, where I was like, dang it, now I really got to read this book. So I ended up, because I didn't get the book in time, but I really wanted to tell this story, I ended up reassembling it myself from newspaper articles.
Well, this sounds like way more work than it needed to be, man. You should have just gone on Amazon and bought the book.
No.
You're like, I refuse.
I have principles. So, the Minahan family was very influential in Green Bay from 1892 to 1954. I'm sure those years are flexible, but for a good chunk of them, good chunk of time, they were influential doctors, lawyers, involved with the local newspaper, politics, all sorts of things. The family generally seemed to be living in the upper class Astor Heights neighborhood of Green Bay. And I don't know Green Bay that well, so I can't really describe where that is exactly. Dr. John Roger Minahan graduated from Chilton High School. The great Chilton High School, of Chilton, Wisconsin.
I don't know. Have we had Chilton come up on this podcast
I'm not yet? Sure. I'm not sure.
We must
probably a lot
have
of on-tap Chilton stories out there. Then went to the Oshkosh State Normal School, which is the teacher's college, and then to Rush Medical College in Chicago. He was president of his graduating class. He had a successful medical practice in Casco, which is kind of like up in Kewaunee County area. He left in 1892 to work as a surgeon at St. Vincent's Hospital in Green Bay. Already by this point in time, as a young man, he had saved over a year's salary because he was investing in land and rental property. This is a very hardworking, smart, clever
doctor.
Doctor.
Or it could just be that this is what doctors do.
Could be.
I've always been told that doctors love buying land.
Do they?
I don't know why that is, but that's like a thing.
So we started out a story with Mary Senefelt. And Mary Senefelt, I might be pronouncing wrong, but I'm going to say Senefelt. She worked as a maid, generally around Green Bay, but she bounced around. She was even in Minnesota for a while. She was not rich. She was not well educated. Apparently, she couldn't read or write very well. And when she returned this time to Green Bay in 1893, she was directed to visit Dr. Minahan because she had stomach problems. They had been bothering her for 2 years. After a quick look, Minahan said that she had ulcers and dyspepsia, gave her some pills to treat it, and then sent her on her way. Apparently, this did not do the trick, and she had to come back and have an operation performed on her by Dr. Minahan. Now, at this point, Dr. Minahan had already been married and divorced once as well. His first wife he divorced because she was diagnosed as insane.
Good reason,
I guess. And I don't really know anything else about that. I don't even know her name. I hope this is covered in the book, because I feel like there's more to that part of the story. It's not important to today's story, but I really want to hear more about this insane wife.
Well, and you got to remember too, man, like this is in the 1800s.
Yeah.
I mean, couldn't you get diagnosed as insane for things that are just kind of normal now? Back then? So, I mean, there might not have even been anything wrong with this lady.
No, that's right? Absolutely true. Yeah, I can't tell you about Green Bay, but I can tell you about Appleton, and I'm sure they're the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the Appleton Asylum, I don't think it was called the Asylum, but I'm going to say Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I've seen some of the records for that place. And yes, you could get your wife committed for refusing to do household chores.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, she clearly has mental problems because she doesn't do wife things. Like, it's, I don't know how that was ever okay, but it's a real thing. And people got admitted for that. A couple of years go by. It's May 1897. Mary, this maid, sues Dr. Minahan for $15,000 over the operation in his private office that she says was botched and also resulted in her having an abortion. During the procedure, he used something called iodoform, which I should have looked up but didn't. But this apparently was part of a how things didn't go well. This did not react well with her. Minahan denied everything. He said, nope, 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 nope. None of this is true. This is all made up. His attorney, Patrick Martin, another guy who lives in this fancy neighborhood, said, quote, she has told and denied this story and others several times within the last few years and has made similar accusations against other doctors. It is my belief that she is mentally incompetent and influenced by others to commence this action. So already they're coming out strong before they even get to court saying, not only did the doctor not do this, but this lady's crazy.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. So a strong defense, a questionable defense, but a strong defense. I couldn't find this in the newspaper articles. I think this might be in the book. Because I was able to gather from the interviews about the book that apparently a running theme for this doctor is when people did things he didn't like, he liked to accuse them of having syphilis.
Okay.
And like late stage syphilis, you become like mentally unstable.
Okay.
So apparently like this is what he would do, is he would be like, you're crazy, and you're crazy because you have syphilis.
Okay.
Like, so I really, again, I'm pitching this book, The Maid and the Socialite. Haven't read it yet, but I'm pitching it. I'm so looking forward to hearing about this. It goes to trial, and the jury actually agrees with the maid. Doesn't give her the full $15,000, but agrees to $5,000. Minahan's attorney objected to the verdict and said that this outcome was impossible because it was contrary to the testimony that they had heard in court. Judge Hastings agreed, and he set aside the verdict. I don't know how this is legal.
Okay.
But the maid's attorney vowed to go to trial a second time. I'm not an attorney. I don't know how this works. You have a jury trial, the jury decides something, and you say, hey, I don't think the jury decided that correctly. The judge is like, you're right. Let's get rid of that. Like, how is that okay?
I mean, isn't that more or less just an appeal?
It would be if it didn't, like, happen that same day.
Okay, so, like, this happened during the trial. Like, the judge...
Yeah.
Wow, that is weird.
Yeah, this happened, like, the exact same day where the jury, like, turned in this verdict, and then the guy's like, no. This verdict is bad. The judge is like, you're right, that is a bad verdict. Like, so what was the point of the jury? The second trial begins in December 1897, so a couple months after the first one ends. Mary Senefeld is grilled by both the examination and cross-examination. The case took multiple weeks and was standing room only for those who wanted to be in the room. Minors were absolutely barred by the judge. Defense attorney Martin tried to convince the room that Senefeld had asked for the operation and had even asked to have an abortion. So now, instead of denying that this thing ever happened, now they're saying, like, well, it did happen, but you asked the doctor to do that. Mary denied that she had asked to have an abortion, saying that she did not know what was being done to her until it was too late, and she was still having physical symptoms from the operation at the time of this trial, which is almost 4 years after the operation. So whatever had happened in this definitely did not go right, assuming she's telling the truth here. A parade of witnesses came and went, including Dr. Minahan's driver and two nuns who worked at St. Vincent's Hospital. Using a combination of memory and hospital logs, they couldn't show that Mary had an operation at the time that she said she was. Other doctors were called to talk about her mental state. One doctor said that, I don't think she's insane. I don't think she is hysteric, but I think she has something that I call nemorosis. I don't know what nemorosis is.
Hey, this is just a term that he made up, probably.
Mary's brother and sister both testified that she was hardworking and, you know, wasn't a liar and, like, wouldn't go after somebody for money. They're like, no, she's worked all her life as a maid. They came to her behalf. The trial ran so long that they had to take a week break for Christmas to let the jury go home and visit with their families. Starting back up, the trial ran through the beginning of January 1898. Dr. Minahan testified again, denied everything up and down. As the trial wound down, it was declared the longest trial in Brown County history.
Wow.
The court reporter said the transcript would be over 400,000 words long. Don't know exactly what that comes to in pages, but it's a lot. The jury went into deliberations and returned after 40 hours. They had a strong disagreement and could not come to a conclusion. It was a hung jury. The prosecution vowed to go to trial a third time. But first, before the third trial happened, Dr. Minahan threw a party for his friend, Dr. Richard Buchanan, who was engaged to be married. He had a wonderful party, and lots of eligible bachelors were there, which caught the attention of young Molly. Oh, wonderful Molly Birtles. who also lived in the neighborhood, had grown up, and was wealthy. She is the socialite of the maid in the socialite story. So she's college educated, which is kind of unusual for a woman of the time. And she goes to this party. She meets Dr. Minahan. Oh, it is a wonderful, wonderful meeting. They get along just great. At various social gatherings and dances, Molly and the doctor grew closer and closer. He was successful and had many powerful friends, including the local bishop. Molly could not help but be attracted to him, despite what she found to be some of his character flaws. He was always suspicious and jealous of her. As recently as 2 weeks before their marriage, they became engaged in this time, as recently as 2 weeks before their marriage, he flew into a rage when he suspected she had been seeing an ex-boyfriend behind his back. In fact, they had met for lunch with her mother present, but that was all. The doctor dropped the matter, and they were wed on November 22, 1899. Now married, Molly became a dutiful housewife after spending a honeymoon traveling through Europe. They would have 2 sons together. Just set that aside for the moment.
Okay. So now we're coming back to a third trial, right? Yeah. Okay.
Well, just about.
Okay.
Just about.
Little so piece yet?
We're still between the second and third trial. So between the second and third trial, the doctor is now married. Mm-hmm. And in November 1899, Mary the maid, her brother John, returns to Cooperstown late at night by horse and entered his brother-in-law's saloon where he had a key. Once inside, he shot himself in the chest and above his left temple. The next morning, he was found by his brother-in-law in a pool of blood. No note was left, so the reason for his action was unknown. There was speculation that he had been studying too hard and had been driven insane by studying too hard, as well as possibly having a disagreement with his girlfriend the night before the suicide.
Studying too hard, huh?
Yes.
That seems like a...
This is legit what the news article said, that he was driven insane by studying too hard.
All right, cool.
Not directly related to the main story, but I throw it in there because it happened during the same time. This brother is one of the people who testified at the second trial. And if they're trying to argue that the maid is insane, it doesn't help her case that her brother apparently was mentally unstable. So I don't know if that, you know, legally they can use that against her, but it doesn't look great. Mm-hmm. The Mary Senefelt case was eventually resurrected in November 1901. So it took more than 2 years before it came back the third time. For the third trial, the jury came back with the verdict that the judge wanted. Dr. Minahan was not guilty. So now that he was guilty and it could get thrown out, and it wasn't a hung jury, but he was now not guilty, they're like, okay, we're not going to have any more trials. We're good now.
We're good. This is what we were looking for.
Yeah. So the doctor's finally free of this. October 29th, 1904. So now some more time passes by. Mary the maid allegedly visits Dr. Minahan and told him that even though he lost the trial, or that he won the trial, he should pay her or give her free medical treatment to take care of the problems that he caused. Otherwise, she would kill him or blind him by throwing acid in his face.
Wow.
He called the police and she was locked up for extortion. She could not afford the $500 bail and was bound over for trial. Before the trial was due to come up, she was bailed out and her attorney filed a complaint of prejudice against the judge and had the trial moved to another court, which ended up delaying it. This actually, through her attorney, this gets dragged on for quite some time, for about a year and a half. Until eventually the prosecutor decides that he doesn't even want to do it anymore and throws the whole thing out. So that's the last we hear of the maid. May 1910, Dr. Minahan files for divorce from Molly, his second wife, citing cruel and inhuman treatment. She fired back, accusing him of brutal treatment. I don't know if these are legal terms. Mm-hmm. If cruel and inhuman is different than brutal, but attorney Victor Minahan, who is the brother of Dr. Minahan, represents him at the divorce, while Patrick Martin represents Molly. Patrick Martin had been Dr. Minahan's attorney during the maid trials. Mm-hmm. So now he's apparently switched sides. He's like, no, now I'm not your buddy anymore. Now I'm going to represent your wife. Yeah. The court sided with Molly, and the case was appealed all the way up to the state Supreme Court. This doctor just does not go down.
Yeah, and does not have very good legal luck, does he?
No. After a year of trials and appeals, Molly eventually did win the divorce, was awarded $23,000, custody of the two sons, was given the household furniture, plus $30 a month for alimony. The $30, I don't know what's up with that. After the
That's probably a lot of money for because we're in the 1890s, man.
I don't think it's bad, but I think it's funny that after the $23,000 settlement, plus we'll give you $30 a month. Like, what? Okay. Following the divorce, Molly apparently lived comfortably with her alimony and settlement, as well as her social status. She probably would have been doing okay either way. She was involved in various organizations, most notably as chairman of the Brown County Red Cross, which ended up becoming kind of a big deal when World War I took off. She never remarried. Dr. Minahan was married a third time. I'm not aware of any problems with the third marriage. This, again, this might be in the book. Mm-hmm. The Maid and the Socialite by Linda Drews. You should pick it up.
This is a heck of a promotion. Man, too bad you don't promote your own stuff like you promote this book.
I know. So, divorce is through. For the rest of this episode, we're not really going to concern ourselves much about Dr. Minahan. There's a little bit left here, but not...
Okay.
February 1918. Molly is taking care of her son, John, who is quarantined because he has scarlet fever. Because he is quarantined, Molly is also basically quarantined because she's not going to take care of a son with scarlet fever and then walk into town and be like, hey, everybody.
Buddy, I got scarlet fever.
Yeah. But she wanted to get some fresh air and exercise. So she was walking along the train tracks just south of Green Bay along the Fox River. So it's about one block from her house at 409 Law Street. Now, it's suggested that because she wanted to avoid other people, she chose to walk along the train tracks instead of walking through town or wherever else you might walk. Eric's like, I already know where this is going. One train crew saw her as she was walking behind Hotchgreaves Brewery. I'm not sure exactly where that was. Another train rounded the bend, and apparently Molly did not hear it. Engineer Carl Fogel pulled the brakes, but it was too late. Molly was hit hard, one leg severed at the knee, the other at the ankle, and her head gashed in, causing instant death.
Wow.
So.
What a gloomy end, man.
Oh, it's not even the end.
That's not even the end? What is they gonna then chop her up into pieces?
And, no.
Oh, God.
So we've got a maid mutilated during an operation. We've got her brother who commits suicide. We've got a wife who's been hit by a train. And we're not done yet. Fast forward a couple years. 1923. John Minahan Jr., the same son who had the scarlet fever.
Okay.
Is now at the University of Chicago. Now, he apparently is having a bad day because while hanging out at the fraternity house at his fraternity house at the University of Chicago, he fires a bullet into his brain and dies.
Wow.
Some later reports refer to this as an accident, but I don't think it was an accident. The original reports are like it's a suicide. Then later on, it's like, oh, it was an accident. I feel like they kind of toned it down later.
Mm-hmm.
February 19th, 1925, 2 years after that, led by a premonition that something fearful had happened, Dr. Minahan hurried to Juneau Park in Milwaukee. He had read in a newspaper that an unidentified young man had shot and killed himself there. The young man was indeed Dr. Minahan's younger son, Robert Minahan, 21 years old, a student at the Medical School of Northwestern University. At first, the reason for the suicide was said to be a woman. A note was found on his body from Louise, who said she was leaving to marry a man named Buddy Hills, but it was soon suspected that this letter was forged by Robert to throw off his family. Instead, it was believed that he killed himself because he had gotten into a fight with his father over money matters.
Wow.
So that's pretty much where we wrap it up. So we've got a doctor, first wife declared insane, second wife hit by a train, does a botched operation on a maid.
In theory, both
of his sons shoot themselves in the head.
I'm going to go with this doctor guy was a very difficult person to deal with.
It seems reasonable.
You know, and I think he knew how to play the game. So if somebody came out of line, he was very efficient at turning it around on them, you know?
Yeah. Again, I'm going to recommend The Maiden Socialite by Linda Drews, although I haven't read it yet, because what that book will have that I don't have is, you know, she went and she got the court records and everything. And I think the court records are going to paint a much darker picture, because this doctor, he's already influential because he's a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a family, you know, who's also got other doctors, other attorneys. One of his brothers was mayor of Green Bay for a while. There was, like I said, one of them was involved as an editor of the newspaper. So, like, he's got this going for him, where the doctors, the lawyers, the newspaper, the local politicians are all kind of on his side.
Mm-hmm.
So what appears in the local Green Bay papers is probably a very tame version.
Right.
Of the story. And I'm thinking that what the testimony that actually happened at trial is going to be far worse than the version that was told in the paper. So that's why I'm recommending the book, because if you think this story, the way I told it, is wild, and I think it's a pretty wild story, I think there's more.
Oh, I think there's a lot more, because there's something, I mean, if you and your younger brother commit suicide, it's going to be because of some source. It's not going to be because you were just both born depressed. It's because something traumatic happened to you. And I'm not saying that it was the doctor who did that traumatic thing, but somebody in their life did something to both of them that drove them that way. And I think you're probably going to learn a lot more about that during the actual testimony.
Yeah.
Whether it be the mother, because both kids were Molly's children,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, these are not the kids of the allegedly insane person.
Right.
These are both Molly's kids.
Yeah. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
And it's a scary story. I'm actually quite interested in reading this book, because I do think that there's so much more probably to this story that would really open your eyes to, like, what really was going on.
I thought it was fascinating because, granted, I don't know a lot about Green Bay, even though it's not that far away.
Mm-hmm.
Green Bay history is not something I know. And I didn't know who the Minahans were. No idea. But they're huge. They're a huge family, you know, not now, but they did so much.
Mm-hmm.
That the fact that, like, they're not better known. Maybe they are in Green Bay, but they're not better known. I thought it was just weird, because I'm like, wow, this is huge. Like, there's no book specifically about them other than now there's this
book.
This not very happy story.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, wow, that's something that I think should be explored more.
It's an interesting story. So do you got anything else, or should we wrap this one up?
I got two little short little things here.
He's got two things. All right. Well,
yeah. One, just this is not really, doesn't really matter, but Linda Drews, again, the author of the book, this came about because she had purchased and lived in, she might still live in, but she lived in the Victor Minahan home, which is the attorney brother of the doctor.
Okay.
So this kind of started, this is like a backwards thing where she's like, oh, this is a really nice home. It was owned by somebody prominent in the community. And so she just kind of wanted to know more about that. And she ended up finding something.
This is what she found, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So it wasn't necessarily that she was really into like true crime type stuff. It was just like she was curious about, you know, the history of her property. And this is what she finds. Again, it's the attorney brother. It's not the doctor. Okay. But it's still kind of interesting that that's what she found when she started like doing her own house history. The second thing is a preview of our next episode.
Ooh, he's got a preview.
Yeah, there's...
That must be a big thing if he's got a preview for
yes,
it. So.
Yes. So, like I said, there's a dozen, two dozen, three dozen. There's no shortage of stories. But next, I know exactly what's next, because next time we're going to discuss another member of the Minahan family.
Really?
Yes. Who died in a very famous accident.
Okay.
So famous, in fact, that Eric knows what it is.
I do?
You do. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but I guarantee you, you have heard of it.
Okay. Interesting. So I'm assuming that this is fast forward many, many years ahead
no.
of this?
No.
This is right around the same time?
Same time.
Wow, this family does not have a good lot of luck today.
Yeah. Yeah, wow. This is within 5 or 10 years of this story. So same time period.
How would I know this thing?
Don't even look it up or anything. Because
I'm not going to look it up, but I will promise you. I feel like because this is something that Gavin knows so, like, is so readily in your mind, like you are aware of this, that you think I probably know about it, but I don't.
I'm 100% confident you know of it.
Okay, wow. All right, well, I guess that is the suspenseful end of the episode, so,
yeah.
So I guess we all have to wait and see what that thing is, right?
Yes, yes.
So, very cool. Is that the end of the Minahan families, or do we just keep going through because all of these people just die in crazy ways?
That will probably be I think we may hear from the attorney again. Not for any tragic reason, but just because he'll show up in legal cases.
Just as an attorney, but
right.
not anything suspicious about him.
Right. I don't believe there's going to be any further Minahan death stories. I could be wrong.
Yeah. We might uncover one.
Yeah, but as of right now, I don't believe so.
Awesome. All right. Well, with that, we'll wrap this episode up. As always, we want to thank everybody for their continued support of this podcast, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in to Fox City's Murder and Mayhem. Join us in 2 weeks for another exciting episode of Murder and Mayhem.